Chapter 7 Jack began showing up after school two or three times a week. In my notebook, I recorded the days he came but could see no real pattern in them. He waited on the Chestnut Avenue side of the church parking lot. Each afternoon, I held my breath and rounded the corner past the rectory. His moods changed from ride to ride. One day he'd buy us ice cream cones and tease me, calling me beautiful, reaching over to stroke my hair. The next time he'd be sulky, mumbling complaints about Rita or his job. It was the format of the show that straitjacketed him, he said. That's what the station manager didn't understand. He was wasting his peak years, squandering himself. He almost welcomed non-renewal. He'd be in New York right now at double, triple his salary if it wasn't for her and her goddamn baby-making. Living with Rita was like walking on eggs. He seemed to talk more to himself than to me, laughing sarcastically or snapping his fist against the dashboard. Whenever he got that way, I felt embarrassed and fidgety, didn't know what to say. Once I told him that, in my opinion, he should just try not to let things bother him so much. "And just who the hell do you think you are, hot pants?" he said, his nostrils flaring. "Your best policy might be to just shut the fuck up." Some days he took different ways home. Mystery detours, he called them. Once we rode past his radio station. Another time, we idled in the rear parking lot of an abandoned grammar school, a brick building with plywood windows and tall weeds growing through the blacktop cracks. Most of his teachers were probably dead by now, he said. Good riddance. He told me how he'd once been benched during some long-ago basketball playoff game because he played the same position as somebody's son.
"They're out to get us, kiddo,"
he said, taking my hand and studying it.
"We've got to be on our guard, you and me."
I told Grandma I'd joined the bulletin board club at school, that I stayed after with other girls to decorate classrooms and haul showcases. Jack always let me off at Connie's superette instead of at Grandma's. Inside, Connie watched me from behind the counter, her face impassive, her arms folded under her huge breasts. Sometimes one of the Pizik sisters was out on the porch or in front of the store watching, trying to figure us out. Jack's rides made their staring unimportant. "Take a picture," I called up one time to Stacia. "It lasts longer." When I got back to Grandma's, usually in the middle of edge of night, I was always hungry. I'd stuff down cookies, potato chips, overripe bananas, urgently, without noticing the tastes. Grandma sat with the shades drawn, mesmerized by her story, oblivious to my wild, risky rides. One afternoon when Jack didn't show up, I walked downtown with Norma French. Her boyfriend Kenny met us at Lou's Luncheonette. He called me Dolly instead of Dolores and blew straw wrappers in Norma's face. I sat poker-faced, forcing myself to listen to the way he laughed from the back of his throat. Dozens of blackheads studded his oily forehead. "Want to see something?" he asked me. He yanked up his yellowy undershirt, exposing two passion marks Norma had given him on the stomach. I got up and left, rather than sit across from them in the booth and watch them kiss. Sister Presentation assigned us science reports, due the week after Halloween. From her list of mimeographed topics, I selected The Miracle of Human Birth. For over a month, I had kept Jack's secret, waiting patiently for his and Rita's announcement. Whenever I saw Rita, I studied her face, her middle, even the way she looked and laughed for visible signs. She gave none. She was as good at secrets as I was. I had already appointed myself the Spite's sole babysitter and picked out names. Christopher Scott for a boy, and Lisa Dolores for a girl. In a recurring vision, Rita sat up weakly in her canopied deathbed and handed me the pink infant. "I'm sorry you have to leave school," she whispered, barely audible. "Take care of both of them. They need you more than I can say."
"Cup of coffee?" Jack asked. He had taken a detour all the way down Chestnut and pulled abruptly into a donut shop parking lot.
"Okay," I said.
I studied him through the store window. He was wearing his wheat jeans and brown plaid sweater. The waitress patted her hair and laughed at something he said. She watched him from the back as he walked out. The coffee against my lips was too hot, and I blew on it, watching the oily surface that swirled on the top.
"Guess what I have to write a report on," I said.
"What?"
"Babies. How they grow inside their mother before they're born."
"Oh, yeah?" he said. He took a cautious sip of coffee and looked straight ahead. "Well, whoopee."
"When are you and Rita going to start telling people about the baby, anyways?"
"Why?" he said, looking over at me. "Did you say anything?"
"No, I was just wondering."
"Oh, well, like I told you, she's a little gun-shy after what happened before. There's no hurry."
"Grandma will probably crochet it a whole wardrobe. When is it due?"
"April, middle of April."
"Really? I have a Life magazine here that I took out of the school library for my report. It's got pictures of what babies look like as they're developing. It's weird. You want to see them?"
"See that waitress in there? Her name is Dolores, too."
He started the car up, rolled back out onto the street.
"It's on her tag, right over her fat tit."
I tried not to hear it. "So do you want to look at the article?"
"I don't like to look at that kind of thing. Rita's medical books have all that stuff in them."
"Can I just tell my mother about the baby? She won't say anything to Grandma. Or can I at least tell Rita I know?"
I knew he was mad from the way he shifted the car. "Look," he snapped. "Either I can trust you or I can't."
"You can," I said. "I was just asking." I took a large gulp of coffee. The hot bitterness of it choked me. I coughed and coughed. Coffee jumped out of the cup, spilling in my lap and onto the floor.
Jack pulled to the side of the road. He reached down with a napkin and wiped the floor. "I'm sorry," he said. "It's just that I'm under a lot of pressure lately."
"Forget it. I shouldn't bug you. I'm the one who's sorry." His hand touched my ankle. He slid his fingers inside my sock and moved them up and down. I pressed my foot hard against the floor so it wouldn't jump. I didn't want him to tickle me. I didn't want to make him mad.
"You and me," he said. "We're special people."
Then he straightened up, put the MG in gear, and drove me back to Pierce Street. I started the report that night, lying belly down on my bed, copying facts onto index cards in the manner Sister had ordered. I counted backward from April 15th, then forward again to the current date. She had to be at least 2 months pregnant.
"Limb buds are quite discernible, and the primitive heart beats rapidly," the article said. "The embryo is the size of a peanut in a shell." Jack walked across the floor upstairs. He was just nervous about it. All expectant fathers were like that. On My Three Sons, Robbie Douglas had driven all the way to the hospital without even realizing he'd forgotten his wife. We were good friends, Jack and me. I'd help him through it. The fetus pictures took up several whole pages. Some of them reminded me of the sea monkeys I'd once seen advertised on the back of a comic book and sent away for. I'd waited weeks and weeks for them to arrive. "Place in a glass of ordinary tap water and watch them come to life," the instructions said. But they remained brittle and lifeless, floating at the top for days until my mother made me flush them down the toilet. The following day in school, Kathy Mahoney placed a small box of party invitations on the top of her desk. All morning long,
I watched her walk back and forth to the pencil sharpener, dropping envelopes on desktops whenever Sister Presentation wasn't looking. Just before lunch, she took her final trip, tossing the empty stationery box in Sister's wastebasket. Norma ran up to me at the end of the day, calling my name loudly enough for others to turn and smirk.
"What are you, deaf or something? You want to walk down to Lou's?"
"Look," I said loudly enough for Kathy and the others to overhear, "stop bothering me, okay?" She looked more curious than hurt. "I just don't want to be friends with you anymore. That boyfriend of yours gives me the creeps." Norma sucked her teeth.
"Look who's jealous," she said.
"That's a laugh and a half," I said, with as much contempt as I could manufacture.
"Maybe if he used a vat of Clearasil, I could look at him without puking."
Her lower lip protruded. She socked me in the stomach.
"Girl fight," someone shouted.
People rushed around us in a circle. I swallowed vomit back down my throat. In tears, I screamed at Kathy Mahoney, at all of them.
"I'm not your free show."
Then I ran past the rectory and onto Chestnut Avenue, their staring and laughing following me.
"Drive fast," I ordered Jack. "Get me away from this fucking school."
That night, my father called. Ma held out the receiver, exasperated.
"Then you tell him you don't want to see him," she whispered. "I'm sick of him accusing me of everything in the book."
I snatched the phone.
"What?"
I said. I listened to more of his promises, miniature golf, restaurant food, movies.
"Do me a favor," I said. "Just pretend I died."
I heard him draw a breath. Then he told me he had just about had it with my busting his agates, that it was about time I got off my high horse and realized. I hung up on his big speech. Jack showed up after school the next day.
"Well, well, well, if it isn't the Queen of Sheba," he said as I climbed into the car. "I was about to take off, if Her Highness kept me waiting any longer."
"What am I supposed to do?" I snapped. "Just get up and leave early?"
He pulled away and down the street. There was a small brown liquor bottle between his legs.
"Well, it's over," he said. "They're shit-canning me. One more month and I'm out of there."
"Your job? Oh, my God! What are you going to do?"
"Right now, I'm going to take me and you on a little adventure," he said.
He lifted the bottle and took a quick, sneaky drink.
"Where? I sort of have a lot of homework tonight. I'm still working on that report."
I didn't like it when he was drinking. I didn't want him touching my feet.
"Fine. Forget I mentioned it." His laugh was bitter.
"You get a job at a better station, Jack. WPRO, maybe. Any station would be lucky to get you."
He shook his head and snickered.
"I guess a ride would be okay, as long as it's not too long."
"Forget it. Don't do me any fucking favors."
"No, please. I want to, really. Where should we go?"
He turned to me and smiled.
"If I told you," he said, "it wouldn't be an adventure."
He drove out on Route 6 until the stores became houses, then woods. The autumn air smelled of apples and wood smoke. Nothing looked familiar. I stuck my arm out the window and let it go limp. Pockets of cold wind kept pushing it up. Canada geese made an arrowhead in the sky. "My mother's got this thing about flying," I said. "In my room I've got this picture she did of a flying leg. When we lived at our other house, she used to have a parakeet who..."
"I don't want to talk about your mother," he said. "Just shut up. I'm not in the mood."
"You'll get a better job. Things will be all right."
He chuckled and sipped from his bottle.
"Want some?"
I shook my head, shocked that he'd ask.
That's a good little pussy, he mumbled.
Look, I don't think that...
You don't think what?
Nothing, I said. Just forget it.
We rode and rode. When we were nowhere in particular, he turned his blinker on. A hand-lettered sign said, Animal Shelter, Town of Westwick. Then we were on a bumpy road lined with pine trees.
I don't get it, I said.
I haven't been out here for a while. There's a reservoir off that-a-way, and a waterfall somewhere around here. Listen for it.
The road dipped and rose, and Jack swerved his way around the ruts and puddles. I thought of the wild rides with my father in Mrs. Massicott's car.
So why are you taking us here? I asked.
I was thinking about this place today while I was on the air, thinking about you, too. You'd be surprised how many times a day I think about you. I want to show you something. This will break your heart.
What?
Don't be impatient, he said.
He had on his teasing smile.
Has Rita ever seen it?
He took another sip without answering me.
Are you drunk or something?
Hey, he said. Didn't I tell you a while back to shut up?
Okay, fine, I said. Just remember, I have homework.
I listened for that waterfall, but heard, instead, the sound of barking dogs up in the trees. It got louder. Came down to the ground. Up ahead was a cement building. Jack slowed, pulled onto a crunchy gravel driveway, and cut the engine.
There, he said.
The dogs were behind chain-link pins that ran the length of one side of the building. Their angry barking filled up the air. A big white one kept lunging at us, buckling the fence with each charge. Jack got out of the car. He tried the doorknob of the building, called hello, knocked on the metal door.
Guy I know's the dog warden, but it looks like no one's home, he called back to me over the barking. Come on out and see the pups.
I approached hesitantly. One had a cloudy eye. Another had scratched his back raw. The white dog bared his pinky-gray gums at us and bit at the wire of the cage.
Why are they out here? I said.
These are the poor fuckers nobody wants. Keep them here a couple of weeks, then they gas 'em.
He reached out and placed his hand on the small of my back, drawing me in next to him.
Don't they have sad eyes? He said. Makes you want to sit down and cry.
I couldn't see it. They were riled and dangerous-looking, and I felt no sympathy. Their claws clicked against the concrete floor as they paced, dodging their turds and their slimy water bowls. Jack started rubbing my back. The dog seemed to calm.
The world is a lonely place, all right, he said. Just look at these guys.
Yep. So where's this waterfall?
We're friends, right? He said. Can I ask you for a favor?
I don't know. What is it?
You promise you won't take it the wrong way?
I won't, I said.
Could I give you a kiss? Just a friendly one.
My stomach pulled in. Blood pounded in my head.
I don't think so.
Some friend.
Then he bent toward me and kissed me anyway, softly, on the mouth. His breath was smelly and sweet from the liquor. His fingers dug into my back. The dogs were barking again.
That felt nice, he said. Nicest kiss I ever had. Don't be afraid.
He tried to do it again, but I pulled away and stood by the car.
And you said there's a reservoir? I said.
My voice was quivery. He laughed and got back in the car, shaking his head. I got in, too. Our door slamming echoed in the trees.
His hand moved to the ignition switch, then stopped.
"Can I ask you something?" he said.
"What?"
"Do you think much about sex?"
"No," I said. "Can we go?"
"Because I think you're very, very sexy. As if you didn't know already. Sometimes when she and I are..."
I wanted to be back at Grandma's, in the bathroom with the door locked, figuring everything out. "Can we just go?" I said.
He reached in front of my knees and flopped down his glove compartment.
I was surprised to see his hand shaking a little. He pulled out a rolled-up magazine.
"See this?" he said. It took me a second to figure it out. A woman on the cover had her mouth on a man's penis.
I flung it back at him.
"Here," I said. "Don't you want to take a look? Aren't you curious?"
I started to cry.
"No." "You sure?"
"Shut up." He chuckled.
"They're doing a great job with you over at that school. You're going to make a terrific nun."
I didn't speak.
"Stop shaking. It's just a magazine." He was trying to sound calm and cool, but his words came out tight and his breath was quick and jerky. I could tell he was losing his temper. "Sometimes I forget what a little kid you really are," he said. "What a little baby."
I jammed my hands under my legs. "I'm not a little kid. I just don't feel like looking at dirty pictures," I said. "So shoot me."
"Maybe I will," he laughed. "The thing is, the way I look at it anyway, is that love isn't dirty. And neither are pictures of it, but some people's minds are."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"Besides, it's not even mine. I borrowed it from someone for a joke. But I guess I made a big mistake. Either that or I was misled by a little cocktease who's probably going to run back and tell Mommy."
"Look, I don't tell her stuff, okay? And I'm not that thing you just said, either."
"What thing?"
"You think I'm such a baby, but I'm not."
"Okay, okay," he said.
He reached over and began playing with my hair.
"Because we're good friends, you and me, and I hate to think I couldn't trust you."
"Well, you can, all right? Can we just go home now?" He rolled the magazine back up and ran the edge of it against my leg, down to my foot, over and over.
"I'll probably have this for a while, before I have to give it back to that guy. You tell me if you ever want to look at it.
We'll look at it together." "No thanks," I said.
"No thanks," he mimicked.
He slid it under the seat. A few of the dogs were lying down. One paced his cage.
"Dolores," he whispered. "Look."
His hand was between his legs. He was rubbing his lump, watching me. I turned away and stared hard out the window, tears falling fast. "Would you please stop that?" I said. He didn't even seem to be the same person. A sudden thought slammed into me. I might not get home.
"Stop what?"
I could hear him still doing it.
"That,"
I said, flailing my hand back at him. Then I flung the door open, was out of the car, running past the dog pens. The animals barked and leapt. None of it seemed real. He caught me behind the building. I lost my balance and he fell down onto me. He twisted my arm back, yanking and pulling. "Don't tickle me," I cried. "This isn't funny. What are you doing?"
He didn't seem to hear. "Little Miss Innocence. Fucking fed up with your bullshit. Give you what you've been looking for." The words spit out of him. "Look at me when I'm talking to you," he shouted. "Bitch!"
His knee jabbed against my leg, pinching the skin against the ground. I looked.
"Now say it. Say, fuck me, Jack. Tell me to fuck it into you."
When I swung, he reached out and caught my wrist, pressing the bone against the ground. He gave my arm another painful yank.
This isn't Jack, I told myself. Somebody, Daddy, the real Jack, will come and save me.
With his free hand, he yanked my skirt up, and I heard something tear.
If you rip this uniform, you're paying for it, I screamed. Honest to God!
Shut up, he whispered, begged. Listen, it's nicer if you don't fight it. We're friends, you and me. Don't wreck it. I can't... It won't hurt if you don't fight, I promise.
He kept fumbling and poking at me. I tried to pull my head up, to punch and spit, but my fists wouldn't land. The drool fell back against my chin. His elbow swung out and jabbed against my throat, gagging me.
His rubbing was rough and mean. His pants were down.
I hate you, I shouted. You pig!
I stopped fighting, cut off by the pain of it. The sound of the barking dogs fell away so that all I could hear was his cursing and grunting over and over in rhythm with each thrust, each rupture. He's splitting me open, I thought. He'll break me, and then I'll die. I turned my head away and watched my fingers rake the dirt. My hand opened and closed. I couldn't feel myself controlling it.
Just pretend I died,
I had told my father. And I knew no one was coming for me, that I was by myself. Jack's anger shook us both. Then he stopped altogether, his dead weight on top of me. He was whimpering, catching his breath. When he got up, he kicked me hard on the leg and walked back out in front. I heard him talking softly to the dogs, soothing them. On the drive back home, he sobbed and talked. He wouldn't shut up. We're awful people, you and me. Don't think this was all my show. We did what we did together. My mind was numb. My insides burned. He seemed to drive so slowly. He was talking about some gun. You don't think I'd use it, but I would. What would she want to live for anyway if she found out what we just did? You want to call my bluff and tell? You just do it. I'll leave a note. Think of all the questions they'd have for you.
When he pulled up near Connie's, he reached over and brushed dead grass off my uniform. I was scared not to let him.
I feel so much closer to you now, he said. You and I are together in this. If you tell anyone, I'll do it. You'll probably hear the shots. Her and me will be lying up there with half our heads blown away. Two deaths, thanks to you.
Three, I thought. The baby. I got out of the car. I looked only at my shoes, one in front of the other, getting me home. Inside, the table was set for supper. Ma's mail was waiting for her on the counter. Potatoes were peeled and cut up in water on the stove. The TV blared in the parlor. I walked past Grandma and up the stairs. My blouse had a dirt smudge on the sleeve. My underpants and legs were filthy with blood and him. I looked at myself in the medicine cabinet mirror. What had happened was going to be always on me, in me, as permanent as one of Roberta's tattoos. Dolores, I said. I repeated my name over and over until it sounded warped and unreal. I was never going to be myself again. I eased down into the bath. I'd made it hotter than I thought I could ever stand. Through the clear, steaming water, I watched my skin redden, studied the swollen place on my leg where he'd kicked me. A thin streamer of blood floated on the surface near my knee. I opened my sore legs wide to the scalding water. I was afraid to stay in my room, afraid to be alone. I could hear him up there.
Grandma looked up from her story.
How was school today? She asked.
All right.
You say that exact same thing every afternoon. Don't you ever have a day that's swell?
No. I wanted Ma to see her face, hear her voice. Know she was real. Know I was inside the house with her and not out there. But when she got home, I saw it wasn't enough. Her mouth talked about her supervisor, her aching feet, her bowling average. The thing that had happened ached up inside me, but was invisible.
Rita miscarried on a Sunday afternoon in November, the week after she'd sat at our kitchen table and told us the good news. Grandma called me to the dining room window and whispered in my ear about the spotting. We watched Jack walk her to the car and ease her down into the passenger seat, then drive her away. At bedtime, they still weren't back. I awoke in the dark, drawn out of a troubled sleep where dogs chased me, cornered me, licked at my feet. I sat up and told myself to admit it. We had killed that baby, Jack and me, destroyed it with the filthy thing we did. I wasn't little Miss Innocence. Hadn't I gotten into the car with him all those afternoons? Touched myself thinking about him that time.
Baby killer Dolores, guilty as sin. Downstairs it was shadowy and still. Steam seeped from the radiators.
The front door handle was cold. The cold sidewalk against my bare feet kept me going. Roberta's back light was on.
Dolores? She said.
She was in pin curlers, pajamas. My knocking had scared her.
What's the trouble, honey? What?
I leaned into her shoulder and sobbed.
Told.
She hugged me and rocked me against her and made me a cup of tea. The comfort of it, the warmth I swallowed, was the first thing I'd felt in weeks. At dawn, we walked back across the street to wake up Ma.
Part 2. Whales.